Ladies and gentlemen, this is Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We've read the briefs. One of us has been in the record. We're familiar with the background facts of this case. You have 15 minutes aside, and the yellow light comes on when there's 5 minutes remaining. I'd ask that you turn off cell phones and pagers, and with that request, counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is William Benjamin, registration number 3140, and I'm the attorney for Douglas. You know, frankly, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. I'll call it Wojak for the purposes of this discussion. First of all, I'd like to point out a rather egregious proofreading error that I made in my brief. I left out some words on page 31, line 4. There's a bracketed word, the, in the middle of that line, and I should have put in, after that word, the words, quote, documents and physical exhibits, unquote. Also, I discovered a few minutes ago to my embarrassment that I left my briefs back at my office, so. Fortunately, I brought my notes for this argument, so hopefully I won't be totally without the ability to answer any questions. As Section 874.107, subsection 6, states, the reversal of a panel decision on an unemployment case requires a finding that either the decision was not supported by the weight of the evidence or it has some egregious legal error, because I think the legal error that we asserted in our brief is the central issue here. I'd like to spend my time here on that issue. The legal error that we submit was the failure of the hearing officer to allow the petitioner to call his witness, Barbara Winter, by telephone. After his attempt to submit Ms. Winter's letter was denied because the employer's witness and representative claimed they never received a copy of it. At that point, the only thing that Mr. Wojcik could have done was to ask that his witness be called by telephone, and his witness was back at the Estes Park office, apparently a former co-employee. We submit that the hearing officer, in his failure to have Ms. Winters called, denied Mr. Wojcik his right to due process.
Mr. Benjamin, didn't Mr. Wojcik get his process that was due when he was told in no uncertain terms that he should subpoena witnesses when they got a continuance?
Well, he was told to subpoena documents. I think if you look at the record.
Wasn't he also told to subpoena documents or any witnesses that he wanted to call?
Well, yes, indeed. The hearing officer mentioned that if he wanted to have Ms. Winters testify, he should subpoena her. But we submit that there is no requirement that any witness be subpoenaed in the unemployment issue, unemployment area. So therefore, and in fact, he was not aware that he would have to or try to obtain Ms. Winter's testimony, because he thought he had gotten her letter and he had submitted that the day before by fax to the hearing officer and to the human resource director. But then the human resource director denied he ever got it. And the, of course, Mr. Wojcik had to admit that he did not attempt to send it to the representative on the issue, on the ground that he did not know how to get hold of her.
Is it prejudicial to the ICAO to essentially insulate an important witness from their right to confrontation of that witness, and to essentially call the important witness by phone, where you can only cross-examine over the telephone?
Well, I'm not sure if it's prejudicial to the ICAO. As a representative of perhaps 1,000 unemployment claimants, I've never experienced a situation where a claimant's desire to call a witness by telephone was ever denied. And in fact, the regulation of the division, you know, specifically allows parties and witnesses to participate by phone, just as they could in any in a live situation. So we would submit that whether Mr. Wojcik erred in failing to subpoena the witness beforehand, he did not have any obligation to do so. And the apparent agreement of the hearing officer with the human resources director's opinion that it wasn't, I guess, the human resources director, who was basically the leading witness, did not believe that he should allow Mr. Wojcik to have a witness under his employment, which is not a good reason for denying a person his right to a witness at a hearing.
Now, what does the record indicate? I assume there wasn't an offer of proof as such, but as to what the testimony was that would have been given by the witness?
Well, there wasn't, as you say, an offer of proof, although the letter that Mr. Wojcik attempted to introduce, which the hearing officer had a copy of, did state exactly how this Ms. Winters found the signed agreement the day after Mr. Wojcik was fired for not signing that agreement, and how she presented it to the claimant's supervisor. And that would have rebutted the inference that is at least present in the employer's brief, that somehow Mr. Wojcik signed the agreement the day after or the same day after he was fired and then gave it to supposedly his friend to bring it in. And apparently that's what the employer wanted to make apparent here to the hearing officer.
Although that wasn't a finding of the hearing officer, was it?
No, he did not find that, but he was aware of what the letter would have said. And he did not...
The letter in the record?
Excuse me?
Pardon me, is the letter in the record?
No, it wasn't admitted in evidence, although it might be in the CD. But it certainly was not admitted in evidence, therefore it should not be considered, of course, by this body. And if we back up one step, the hearing officer, although he had a copy of this letter, although he stated in the record that there was a receipt showing that the letter had been received by the employer, despite the employer's witness denying that he had it, he was candid in saying that he did not want to allow the hearing to be postponed again because he'd already done it once. And I would submit that a hearing officer's admission that he is not granting a postponement to allow Mr. Wojcik to get his evidence to the other side because he didn't want to continue it again is not a good reason for denying Mr. Wojcik's, you know, basically essential need to get justice in this matter.
Doesn't he have discretion to deny further continuance?
Oh, absolutely.
And isn't that what we review here, is whether or not he breached his discretion?
Yes, but we're talking about a very naive claimant here who's trying to present a case against, you know, a very experienced representative, certainly, and employer. So I think under the terms of the regulation that we're dealing with here, Regulation 11.2.9, the hearing officer should have gone the extra mile to allow Mr. Wojcik his opportunity to prove that he did indeed sign this thing and that he should not have been terminated over that matter.
And while we're on that issue, although you couch this in terms of due process, Mr. Benjamin, isn't the real question whether or not there was abuse of discretion in the hearing officer's decision not to allow him to call a witness that he not previously indicated would in fact be there? That's the question.
Well, I don't believe that he had the discretion to refuse to allow a witness to be called unless it was some kind of a repetitive situation where this testimony had already been granted. But where obviously Mr. Wojcik's whole case was that he had indeed signed this paper, and to refuse him the ability to prove by another outside witness that he had indeed signed that and left it at his workplace, I believe that he was, if you want to couch it as abuse of discretion, I believe the hearing officer did abuse his discretion.
Well, there was testimony, however, that people searched his cubicle area and found no such letter or no such signed policy.
Exactly. And who testified that? The supervisor who was instrumental in getting Mr. Wojcik terminated. Obviously, she would not have been, obviously she stated that she maybe looked but couldn't find it, but that's where this Barbara Winter's testimony would have been necessary to show that indeed it was perhaps in an open area where the supervisor could have found it if she had indeed searched it. And
although we don't know that.
Well, not until and unless Mr. Wojcik's allowed to have his witness testify.
And a follow-up on another point you made, Mr. Benjamin, about Mr. Wojcik being naive. That's not in the record, is it? That he's naive?
Well, it's in the record in terms of his not being aware of the process and having to be explained that process several times, apparently, according to the hearing officer. So I do submit he was naive, although we can't, that's not an issue here before the court, obviously. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Katie Allison, and I am appearing today on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. This case should be affirmed for two reasons. One, the claimant was insubordinate, and two, the claimant was afforded due process. And I'll jump to the due process question because that's what we've focused on so far here today. The claimant argues that he should have been able to call Ms. Winters to testify at the hearing. The claimant had ample opportunity to make Ms. Winters available, and he failed to do so. Just as you noted, Judge Graham, the hearing officer even continued the hearing to give the claimant another chance to make the witness available. The hearing officer...
Would you address Mr. Benjamin's argument that the regulations allow for witnesses to appear by telephone and that generally that is allowed? What would be different here?
Sure, it's definitely true that witnesses are allowed to be available by telephone. And I'll even go so far as to say it's true that Mr. Wojcik was not required to subpoena this witness because apparently this witness was favorable to him. But he still failed to make this witness available. And he was told numerous times that he needed to do that. The hearing was continued for him to make this witness available. All he had to do was ask his witness prior to the hearing, are you going to be available the day or the time of the hearing? Not even to come in, but maybe be available by phone. But if he had done so, even Mr. Wojcik says that the reason he didn't subpoena her was because she couldn't take time off of work, which we know that if he had subpoenaed her, she obviously could have gotten time off of work.
Did anyone try to get her on the line to see if she was available at the office? Or?
No, nobody did, but I would argue that it was really no different. The employer was in the hearing at the time, and the hearing officer said, employer, is she available? Employer said no. That's no different than calling work and saying...
Do we know what that means? Generally available might mean out of state or something like that. I mean, if it's a phone availability, it would seem to be, I guess what I want to know is there anything that really explains why the witness was unavailable, what the circumstances were?
I don't think the record particularly explains that. I would say that she was working and the employer didn't want, you know, she may have been with a patient or whatever. Just on that point, it was the claimant's job to have Ms. Winters available at the hearing. He was given ample opportunity to do so, and he failed to do so. So, as you noted, it was the hearing officer was well within his discretion by not allowing her to be called. I would like to briefly address the letter that Ms. Winters supposedly wrote. And really what's going on with this letter is it was not reliable. It was hearsay. And as the claimant admitted, he didn't provide it to the employer, which is definitely one of the factors to show that it was hearsay, but it's also required in the administrative procedures. But I also wanted to note the Flower Stop case, which gives 9 factors for when something is inadmissible hearsay, and this letter didn't satisfy any of them. It was not signed. It was typewritten. No, you couldn't discern somebody's handwriting. It was not sworn to. It was not in affidavit form. It was done by somebody who the claimant admits he was friends with, which shows bias under the factors. And then Ms. Winters alleged that she found the policy in Mr. Wojcik's office and after he was discharged. But there is clear evidence that when he was discharged, Mr. Wojcik went and cleaned his office, didn't produce the policy. And then 2 of his supervisors went and cleaned his office looking for the signed policy and cleaning out his office, and they didn't find this letter. Even Mr. Wojcik said that he didn't know exactly where the signed policy had gone, apparently, but he said twice that he thought this signed policy was in a file folder, not on a cabinet in his office. So Ms. Winter's alleged letter is certainly not, doesn't comport with the rest of the evidence. It doesn't satisfy any of the hearsay elements for being admissible hearsay in administrative proceedings. And as my final point, I'd like to quickly discuss that the claimant was insubordinate. When the claimant's supervisor brought the policy to him and asked him to sign it, he said, "No, this doesn't make sense. This is frivolous. I want to talk to the person who wrote this." A week later, when the supervisor hadn't received it, he was discharged. And at that point, he said, "Oh, but I signed it." But he did not produce it, and he did not offer to go find it. He even went through his office, like I said, gathering his belongings, and he didn't produce it. And then his supervisors went through his office. No policy. Still not there. And that's when, a day after he was discharged, Ms. Winters allegedly finds this signed policy in his office.
Ms. Allison, let's assume for a moment that that Ms. Winters testifies, mm-hmm. and testifies that she found the letter in the office. Would that make a difference on the facts of this case?
I think it's actually supportive of the employer's case, in my opinion, because when she says that she found it in the office, yet 3 people went through the office and didn't see it, I think that sort of discredits her testimony. It discredits Mr. Wojcik's testimony that he even signed it.
Well, that's a credibility issue, isn't it? Even though they might have more witnesses on the point.
Right. I mean, it is a credibility issue determination for the hearing officer. And I think the hearing officer wouldn't change his position in any way.
My question was a little bit different. My question assumes that she found the letter just where Mr. Wojcik said it was.
Absolutely, I understand.
Could he still be found to be insubordinate simply because he said what he did at the time he was asked to sign it and then didn't provide it within a week? That's my question.
Yeah, I absolutely think that that would constitute insubordination, especially given the fact that He has a history of disobeying the employer's policies. He had even, he had been given several warnings about his failure to punch in and out, and he'd even been given a final warning. He was on thin ice, and he knew that. And then the fact to say, no, I'm not going to sign this policy. No, this policy doesn't make sense. I think that's insubordination. But even if you look at the definition of insubordination under Colorado Revised Statute 873-108-5E6, deliberate disobedience of a reasonable instruction. And the Rose Medical Center case says that this is an objective standard. Was this an instruction that a reasonable person would have disobeyed?
Well, when he said that he wanted to question the fellow who made up the policy, the employer didn't say, you need to sign that now. She basically just let him take it.
Right, but in her opinion, what happened is he refused. He said, no, this is frivolous. I'm not going to sign this. So then a week later, when she hadn't seen it, she said, she didn't say, oh, he didn't get it back to me in a timely manner. She didn't think he was planning on signing it at all. And there were two other schedulers who were in, he was a scheduler. There were two other people in his same position. They signed it and returned it right away.
Right, but just because they did that and he didn't sign it and return it right away, she didn't necessarily communicate that it had to be done right away, did she?
I don't think she did, but I think she maybe would have if he hadn't said, no, I'm not going to sign it.
Didn't she follow up here and ask him where the signed policy was?
She did the same day, because what happened was she first left it on his desk. He wasn't there, so she came back later in the day and said, did you get a chance to look at the policy? He said, yes, it was frivolous, blah, blah, blah. She said, and he said he wasn't going to sign it. So essentially she did follow up, you know, that same day.
And as far as delivering it to her, that Mr. Wojcik said that there wasn't a mailbox, that the way he delivered documents back to his supervisor is that he left it in this filing cabinet with other documents, that some sort of a file.
Right. And really, I think that goes back to the fact that he had been warned so many times about his behavior, not following policies. And I think a reasonable person would have made sure that that policy got in the hands of his supervisor once he signed it. But it's clear from the record that he had no idea where the policy had gone. I think I said in my brief, numerous places, he said, I left it in a file folder. The new hires put it in a file folder. I left it in the place I usually leave things for Ms. Kiefer. I left it in that location. I mean, he didn't have a clue where he had put it. And I think given the fact that he was already on shaky ground, he should have.
Well, apparently he wasn't meticulous with his paperwork, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he refused to sign it.
I think given the fact that he said he refused to sign it, though, and then failed to give it to her after a week, and then on top of all that, when he was fired for not signing it, he didn't find it for him. He didn't go looking for it. He did say, yes, I signed it, but he didn't. I mean, he had a chance to clean out his desk, his office. He had plenty of opportunity to go find the signed policy, and he didn't. He didn't. He was insubordinate. And the other thing I wanted to point out is this policy was merely a documentation of a policy that was already in place. And I think that's even why he said this is frivolous, is because he knew that this policy was already in place. It was just the employer wanted him to sign it. So the question is, why didn't he sign it? He was being insubordinate. In sum, this case is simple. The claimant was discharged for being insubordinate. He was insubordinate, and the hearing officer properly conducted the hearing. Unless I hear any further questions, the Industrial Claim Appeals Office respectfully requests that this court affirm their decision denying claimant's benefits. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin? You bet. You've got 3 minutes and 9 seconds.
I'd like to respond to Ms. Allison's last statements almost that he did not sign this. He did sign it. He said at every point on the day he was fired that he had signed it. His potential witness would have testified that he signed it and had indeed had the piece of paper that showed his signature. I think Mr. Wojcik initially thought that he wanted to check with the author of the policy. Then he said that he tried to a couple of times and then talked to his fellow schedulers and decided to sign it. And so he put it up in the space where he normally returned these things to his supervisor, and he had no idea that that would potentially terminate his employment because it could not allegedly be found. And I think the evidence is that the supervisor did not even ask him at the time she reported his failure to return the form to her. She just noted that to the human resource director, and it sounded like the human resource director just exploded with glee that this was a chance for him to terminate this troublesome employee, Mr. Wojcik. And in terms of his previous warnings, the testimony was that Mr. Wojcik had just gotten a 24% raise by this same human resource director 3 months earlier and had been trying to keep his job, I would submit, based on that increased money. So we would submit that the key to this entire thing is Ms. Winner's testimony, which was denied in this case. And then if the testimony were provided, the hearing officer could determine, as he usually does, the credibility of the witness, and then decide how credible that witness is in terms of her support of Mr. Wojcik's allegations and statements, and then make a decision. But because the human resource director did not want Ms. Winters to testify, obviously, and just said, I don't want her to, she's not available without any basis for that whatsoever, the hearing officer went along and agreed not to call that witness. All we're asking for is that witness have a chance to testify. And I would submit that in that case, the hearing officer would have an opportunity to address the issues that he normally does with all the facts involved here. So unless there's any further questions, I will ask that the claim be granted his new witness. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Thank you, Ms. Allison. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. That completes our docket for this afternoon, and the bailiff may announce a recess.